Chapter one, take two,
Nice.
This was our goodbye. Out, alone, next to the FM, the breeze down from the mountains still cool and spicy, the sun still hot, glinting off the white paint of the hood. Ruth hugging me tight, already crying a little, and me with my hands shoved in my pockets, refusing to hug her back. Rick and I talked about this anger you have toward me, Ruth said into my neck. You have so much anger in you. I said nothing. The worst thing I could possibly do right now is give up on you because I let your anger get to me. I won't do that to you, Cammy. I know that you can't see it right now, but that would be a terrible thing to do. Not bringing you here, giving up on you. I still didn't say anything. Ruth put one of her hands on each of my shoulders and pushed back from me, held me at arm's length in front of her. I won't do that to you. Your anger with me won't change my mind, and I won't do that to your parents' memory either. I jerked out from under her grip and stepped back. Don't talk about my parents, I said. My parents would never send me to a fucked up place like this. I have an obligation you can't understand, Cameron, Ruth said, keeping her voice level and calm. And then more quietly she said, And to be clear, you don't know everything there is to know about your mom and dad and what they'd want for you. I knew them both for a much longer time than you did. Can't you even consider for a minute that this is exactly what they would do in this situation? What she said wasn't any profound thing, but it landed on me like a football tackle all the same. It was just the place to hit me to make me feel weak and stupid and guilty, and most of all, afraid, because she was right. I didn't know much at all about the people my parents had been. Not really. And Ruth had called me on it, finally, and I hated her for doing it. Ruth kept going. I don't want to leave you this way, with all this anger between us. But I didn't let her finish. I took a step toward her. I made myself look right at her. I was careful and slow with my words. Did you ever think that maybe...
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Did you ever think that maybe it was you coming that made me this way? Maybe I would have been fine, but then every single choice you've made since they died was the wrong one. The face she made confirmed just how terrible my words were. And they were lies, of course. But I couldn't stop. I didn't stop. I got louder. The words just came and came. Who do I have but you, Ruth? And you let me down, and now you have to send me here to try and fix me, quick, before it's too late, before I'm fucked up for good. Quick, fix me fast, Jesus, heal me up, quick, before it sets in for life. She didn't slap me. I so wanted to head back into that fake lodge with a bright, hot, red slash across my face, but Ruth didn't slap me. She stood sobbing tears more genuine than any I'd ever seen her cry over me. I believed that. The authenticity of those tears, those sobs, kept on coming even as she got into the FM and pulled away. I could see her heaving great sobs through the window, unable to look at me, or unwilling, and I felt that finally, I had actually done something awful enough to deserve that reaction.
Ah, teenagers.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Chapter 1, Take 2, the podcast.
It's the lesbian episode!
Oh, they're all lesbian episodes because we're lesbians. But this one is quadruple lesbian. Cameron Post, Abby, and Brie and I. Anyway, Chapter 1, Take 2. I've got to turn this voice off.
You can't.
I can't! That's how it is forever.
This is good voice.
Don't do that. Chapter 1, Take 2, the podcast where we read the book, watch the film, and discuss the adaptation. Adaptation is, every time I say that, I think of my brother because in one of our first episodes he said, you said adaption and it's adaptation. And now every time I say adaptation, I think both it's correct, but also Cameron was like, you said it wrong the first time. Sorry, Cam.
Maybe we should just say adaption from now on.
Yeah, well, he doesn't even listen to it. He won't even listen to it anymore. Anyway, my name is Maddie.
My name is Brianna.
It is, and this week we have a very special guest, our lovely, lovely friend.
She's special because she's a lesbian!
Yep, hey. And also because she's awesome, Abby Robertson.
Hi!
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's such a pleasure. I think you actually recommended this book.
I did. I kind of peer pressured you guys onto it.
Oh, but we're so glad. Wait,
what? Yeah. Best peer pressure.
Yeah. Read this lesbian book. Okay. I was talking to you earlier about how Brie and I had probably more experience reading young adult lesbian literature as a teen. Brie didn't read any, did you?
Nothing.
And it's just so good to reflect on that now in our late 20s. Oh my God, late 20s. Oh, you're in your early 20s. Anyway, from that reading, you may have guessed this episode we are covering the mess. Ooh, that's not how you say that. The miseducation of Cameron Post.
All that's left is your signature, and we're good to go. Now you're officially a disciple of God's promise. Welcome.
Fuck.
Written in 2012 by Emily M. Danforth. What a book.
I know. So pivotal for me.
Yep.
I think.
Come closer.
I feel like it was pivotal for me, and I'm 27.
Yes. Very loved it a lot. First, why did you recommend this book, Abby? Apart from obvious reasons. Wanting to spread the goodness.
I mean, I feel like I knew that you guys would really like it.
Yep. You were correct.
And I would probably put it up there as one of my favourite books.
Ever.
And also, when I watched the movie, I was disappointed.
a frequent thing we experience on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, and it gets such good reviews.
Well, yeah. I bet they haven't read the book.
Yeah, that's always how it goes. I feel like if you don't have that context of what to compare it to,
yes.
You don't know what you're missing out on.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. As true with anything in life. It's such a delight. I was very... First impressions is a new segment that Brown introduced to reflect... this is the same as what happened last week. The person we had on the podcast had already seen it, and so it's like a cheap thing. But also, we could ask you what your first impressions were anyway. For me, because we had watched the trailer as part of our research for the podcast, I did see, I was like, oh, okay, it's mainly based around Cameron being at the camp, God's promise. And so I was prepared for there to be lots of flashbacks. I was very curious in how they were going to fit so much content into a 1.5 hour film, because the book follows Cameron from the age of 12 to the age of 17.
Yeah.
And the film basically just has, yeah, the entire time with her at the camp, the conversion therapy camp. Yep, I knew that they would miss out a lot of context. They like cut a bunch of characters, which I was anticipating. I still really enjoyed the film. Yeah, but it's pretty easy. I don't know. Pretty easy for me to like a film when it's about coming of age lesbians. I'm a lesbian. What were your first thoughts? First impressions, baby. Anticipations.
I expected to be quite disappointed because we saw the trailer and it was all at the camp. It was all about the camp. It opens up with her signing the contract to go into the conversion therapy, which is such a ceremonial bullshit thing. Because
it's not a choice.
Yeah, nobody who's there wants to. Well, yeah. But also no. Yeah.
Some do.
I find it hard to believe that too terribly, terribly many people would, like, as they suggest, turn themselves in.
Mm.
But I do feel like there were some people, and there are some people, who really take conversion therapy seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was your environment and everything around you was telling you that this is wrong and this is something that you need to change, then I can see then that that would be something like a path that some people go down, like, oh, I need to kind of come clean here because what people are saying, this is like the worst sin or whatever.
Hmm.
I'm experiencing it, so I need to, you know, change it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for me, I feel like I was sort of more of, like, if I classified myself as a Christian who thought about their sexual desires, I would say that I was more of an Aaron, where I really wanted to believe in everything, but it was very performative, and it was very like, if I do all the right things, then like I'll believe it and I'll be good enough. But I never really got to that point.
Just some trigger warnings for this episode, because it can get quite dark. There is self-harm being discussed. Don't listen if it's going to impact you negatively. Take care of yourself first and foremost, as always. And saying that, what we were just talking about made me want to look up some statistics. I love statistics, even though a lot of the time they're very horrific. This was just from Statista.com, which is a US site, published in July 21st, 2020. Around 28% of US LGBTQ plus, I'm adding that in, youth who have experienced conversion therapy had attempted suicide within the previous 12 months as of 2020, compared to 12% of LGBTQ plus youth who had not experienced conversion therapy. So that's over double. The statistic illustrates the share of LGBTQ plus youth in the US who attempted suicide within the past 12 months as of 2020 by experience with conversion therapy. Yeah, we just, the date today is the 18th of October. And yesterday we had the New Zealand election results released. I'm just bringing that up specifically because part of Labour, who has now been made, they have a majority to run government. Part of their policy is to ban conversion therapy in New Zealand, which I can't believe is still legal. But I'm very interested to see if they stand to that. And I'll be very annoyed if they don't.
I think they will.
I think it'll be quite an easy thing to ban.
Yeah, it's just whether or not they make it a priority is what I'm saying.
I feel like I feel like in the US, if they try to ban conversion therapy across the country, it'll become a states' rights battle.
Yeah.
Like, well, but that's the problem with states. It's a different topic. Anyway, yeah. Should we do a summary?
Let's. Just one final thing. I'm pretty sure from a video that I shared on my Facebook page, there was a video essay done about conversion therapy specifically in the USA, and 40,000 youth, which I think is under the age of 18, are sent to conversion therapy every year, which is an obscene amount of people. Bree, you can do the summary now. Thanks.
Great.
Sorry.
So the book opens with Cameron and her best friend, whose name is...
Oh. Ooh. What's this noise?
Irene,
yes.
Oh, very good.
I get you. That took way too long for me, though.
Anyway. Cameron and her best friend, Irene, and they are best mates, and they like to dare each other to do things, and one day Irene dares Cameron to kiss her, and they do. And
yeah, they're like 12.
They both like it, and Irene is a little bit more willing to, like, be... this be a thing, and Cameron's a little bit more hesitant. And then what happens is Cameron's parents die, and Cameron kind of unintentionally convinces herself that potentially this thing inside her may have brought about her parents' death, and that it's a punishment from God. And also, the first feeling she has when she finds out that her parents are dead is that she hasn't been caught as a gay person.
Yeah.
And they'll never know.
Yeah, they don't have to know.
And she's relieved.
Makes her feel double guilt.
Yeah, kind of fast forward, her and Irene drift apart because Cameron doesn't want to, like, she doesn't want to, she feels like it's...
she doesn't want to be tempted. She's basically shutting down.
She feels like it's like a disgrace to her parents' memory if she keeps seeing Irene. So they grow apart.
She probably also, I don't know if this is explicitly said in the book, but she probably also, she's like, how can I feel happy when my parents have just died?
Yeah.
And being with Irene makes her happy.
Mm. Yeah, so It's self-torture. She meets Lindsay, who is from Washington, but they swim together in the summer competitions. And
isn't she from Seattle?
In Washington? Yes?
I have no idea. You would know.
You said Seattle like you were correcting me.
Washington DC. We were both thinking Washington DC. Anyway,
there's two.
There's too many states in America.
And Lindsay is like, because she's from the city, she's like, you know, she's more open about her sexuality, and she kind of like helps Cameron educate herself. But I have some theories about that, because I think her education isn't always accurate.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and she's very uppity about it. She's like, very uppity. I know better than you.
I'm an experienced lesbian. Yeah,
I'm a worldly lesbian.
Yeah, I've slept with all the dykes.
Do you even know what pride is?
Would you go with me, Cameron?
Okay, and then she meets Coley Taylor, who is in her high school, and they're in the same Bible study, and they start carpooling together, and they become friends.
I was in love with so many Coley Taylors as a young teen.
Yeah, you were.
Never fall for the straight girl. It's the story of my life, don't even start.
Straight girls, they don't know what they're missing out on. But like, Coley is not entirely maybe straight. We don't really get that answered in the book or the film, but Coley is kind of the one who actually initiates their relationship in a lot of ways. And they begin kind of making out, and it culminates in a night where they have sex, and it's very consensual. Like, Cameron is like, tell me when to stop you. Tell me when to stop. And Coley says, not now. And then Cameron moves her hand lower and says, tell me if I should stop. And Coley says, not now.
It's
and,
a very good example yeah, of
it's
consent.
Like, it's very consensual, but still very sexy.
Yeah, they're much older now. They're about 16?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 15, 16. And yeah. And then they don't get caught like they do in the movie, but her brother does come home and...
They have to hide it.
And what is interesting is in the conversation between Coley and Cameron beforehand, Cameron says to Coley that she loves her, and Coley realizes that for Cameron, this isn't like fun experimentation. This is maybe who Cameron is. And for Coley, she sees it as if it's fun experimentation, then she can distance herself from it because it's not who she is.
Yeah.
And then Coley tells her parents everything, and Cameron gets sent to conversion therapy where she meets Jane Fonda and
Adam.
And then
Adam Red Eagle is his character's name.
Yeah, and like Mark and Aaron and a bunch of other characters. Yeah, and a
bunch of other young gay people.
Yeah. And Cameron doesn't really buy into it, but she's also, in the book, she's not really like, she's annoyed that she's being sent there. But for me, the reason I picked that scene is because I feel like she's annoyed in the kind of way that teenagers are always annoyed with any of the decisions that their parents make, less than she feels like she's being actively oppressed. And I don't think she realizes she's being oppressed until Mark self-harms.
Yeah. What do you mean by that? Tell me more about a normal, like a less extreme example of a teenager just being annoyed at an adult's decision just because.
Well, I think it's like if you get grounded, or like if you're dating someone and your parents are like, that person isn't good for you. You know, and they're like, and it's more like, you don't know anything, mom.
Yeah. You're out to get me.
You don't understand me. And I feel like that's how
I feel like for the sake of it.
Because... Yeah. I feel like that fight between her and Ruth is very indicative of her just like, she's angry at Ruth because Ruth doesn't understand her, and Ruth doesn't understand her because she's gay, but also because Cameron's just a bit of a moody teenager. Like, yeah, she really
sure.
is.
Yeah, she really is. She is.
Like, I feel like the Cameron in this book is so realistic. So, like, the things she says, the way that she intentionally hurts her parents is not that different from the way a straight person intentionally hurts her parents. And that's why I really liked the book and why I didn't like the movie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, and the book ends with basically Cameron...
They run away.
Cameron, Jane, and Adam run away, but it's very different because Cameron in the novel is a swimmer, and there's a whole lot of...
Because her parents die by driving into a lake.
Yeah, yeah, and then at the end of the book, she goes and swims in the lake. And
where her parents
die. Yeah, where her parents die, and she kind of forgives herself for feeling relief when she first found out that they'd died, so that because they didn't know that she was a lesbian. And it's very beautiful. And I'm really sad that scene was cut from the film.
Yeah.
I'm really sad they took out the whole swimming thing.
Well, that whole kind of storyline was streamlined.
It really was. Shall I do Maddie's fun facts quickly?
Maddie's fun facts. Yep. She's going to ask us what we think it got on Rotten Tomatoes.
I am, but I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Jeez. I think, yeah, the film's interesting. It was released in 2018, 6 years after the novel was written. It's classified as a drama romance.
Not accurate.
I wouldn't say that at all.
What romance?
Yeah.
The romance ends 10 minutes into the film.
Yeah. Cameron Post is played by the amazing Chloe Grace Moretz, who was 19 at the time of filming the film. Coley Taylor is played by Quinn Shippett. Jane Fonda by Sasha Lane. And Brie was telling me about the fact that Sasha is actually part Māori.
Yeah.
From New Zealand. Her mum's from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Adam Red Eagle.
Like we could see her on the street.
Not me. We don't know if she lives here.
Not in Lotatahi.
No.
Maybe she doesn't live here. She's probably like, oh, America's fucked. I'm fleeing to New Zealand. Hey, Jacinda!
Adam Red Eagle was played by Forrest Goodluck, which is a fantastic name. Reverend Rick, whose character looks very different in the film compared to in the novel, is played by John Gallinger Jr.
Yeah, he's described as the kind of person that all the girls in the Bible study have a crush on him because he looks essentially like Jesus.
And he's got long hair.
This actor does not look like Jesus. No, this actor looks like one of my teachers in high school.
He's got a creepy mustache. He's got real short hair. Like, he's not weird looking, but he's like, he does not look like...
He just looks like a dad.
Yeah, does not look like the... It's not appropriate. Lydia is played by Jennifer Ehle. Which is funny because there's like Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale as well. There's an Aunt Lydia in this, which came out after. Yeah, I wonder if that's intentional because both Aunt Lydias are very oppressive. There's lots of characters to go through.
Well, The Handmaid's Tale was written long time before. Yeah,
I know. Yep. That's what I said. Erin, I initially wasn't saying that, but I corrected myself mid-thought.
Okay.
Who is Cameron's roommate and very mixed signally roommate at the conversion therapy camp is played by Emily Skiggs. We talked about this.
I don't think
recording.
She's mixed signally at all.
There's just that moment of weakness that she has.
Yeah, I think because so something that I really missed in Jane Fonda's character is that in the book she seems in tuned to what's going on in the heads of other people. Like she's like aware that Mark isn't
actually
as happy with himself and like and the same thing with Erin. Like she's an interesting person to watch. She says that you need to watch these people.
Yeah.
And she but like she, we don't get that vibe from her.
No.
In the film?
We don't.
We do get from Cameron that she seems completely unaware of the intentions of people around her.
Yeah. But the film is a very different interpretation. Like, we talked about a lot of characters. We don't agree with the casting. Like, Dalton Herod, who plays Jamie, who is called Cameron's boyfriend in the movie, but he's not at all. Like, their relationship is very different. I don't know.
They do kind of boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah, kind of. Grandma's cut, but she was cast as Dale Soles. So she's on this list.
There's footage somewhere.
Yeah, there must be deleted scenes.
Yeah, there must be deleted scenes. Which we will find out. Aunt Ruth, played by Kerry Butler. Yeah, that's fine. Mark's played by Owen Campbell. Yes, what do you guys think the film has on Rotten Tomatoes as a rating?
86%.
79?
Did you look?
I didn't.
It's 86%! Damn, Brie! That's very impressive. 6 out of 10 on IMDb. The budget for the film was $900,000, and at the box office, cumulatively worldwide, is $1.4 million.
Well, that checks out, though. Like, it's not surprising to me that it didn't get picked up. So, this had a release before, a theatrical release, which isn't uncommon with indie films. So, it was released at Sundance Festival, and it won an award.
Yes.
But then wasn't picked up for distribution in the US for many, many months after that won the award. And then the distribution that I got was very limited. It was only, like, 78 theaters, which is, like...
No, that's not a lot at all.
It's... In America? No, it's like
tiny one
state.
Yeah.
And
what do you think that is?
It's a gay movie.
Because
It's a gay America's movie with explicit sex
critique on
yeah, there's boobs.
Conversion therapy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're not ready. Okay. Yeah. My last thing is that the director was Desiree Akhavan, A-K-H-A-V-A-N.
Alcaran?
No, A-K-H-A-V-A-N.
Okay, all
right. Well, what is it?
I don't know.
Akhavan. Is it?
We're going to get it wrong.
Well, you're adding an A onto it that doesn't exist. Akhavan.
No, A-K.
Oh, okay. H. Okay. A-V-A-N. Your handwriting is terrible. This looks like an L and a C together.
No, A. Akhavan. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
A film she did before this was called Appropriate Behavior, released in 2014, about a Persian bisexual woman.
Boom. Love it.
And I just wanted to bring that up.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so how would you rate the film as an adaptation of the book?
4.
Yeah.
How would you rate the film as an adaptation?
Maybe 5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say maybe 5.
Okay.
Go a little bit higher, because it's still... kind of falls apart of at least the...
A final third?
The final third. It's in 3 parts, so yeah.
I think the film is a very different story from the novel.
Mm.
And I really liked the novel. And I mean, the novel could be made into a mini TV series.
That's what it should have been.
Yeah. We say that about so many books, but it is so true because...
Well, this particular one has like quite
a long timeline. Time. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
And I think one of the things for me that I really admired about it, I'm pretty sure it was the first book, like any kind of LGBT book that I'd ever read. And it was like not long after I had come out.
Yeah.
And so seeing that representation in a character and being able to relate to those specific moments along her like kind of tween and then early teens, like all of that sort of dialogue and the emotions and the things that she was going through, and then that's really not present in the movie for the most part.
Like, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, straight into the meat.
Yes,
you know,
the meat of it.
Yeah,
because like, what I really liked about the book is that if you take the gayness out of the story until the last third, it's not really about her being gay.
No, no, no.
Like, it's about her... Like, it's a gay coming-of-age story, but it's not about her being gay. It's about her coming of age.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And then the third book is about her being... The third of the book, the last third at the conversion camp, is about her being gay. But even then, it's not... This whole book isn't about the oppression of gay Americans. And it doesn't even become about that until the last third of the book. It's just about her kind of finding herself. Like, she's not even sure, I think, throughout a huge portion of the book that she is gay. She doesn't really self-identify as a lesbian unless she's slinging the word in her aunt's face in the car.
Mm.
I think it almost makes a point of kind of saying this isn't a chosen thing. Like, it's so interwoven into just the way that she is.
It's such a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
I think that's probably part of the reason why the book starts that early.
Yes.
To kind of give a broader...
Reinforce that point.
...timeline.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I was vocally upset at the beginning of the film because for me to see religion used to oppress people, which it does on the daily, it just made me so angry because I'm like, it's so stupid. Like, I was gay. Like, I remember having a crush on a girl whose name was Megan in kindergarten. So this is before primary school. So I was 3 or 4. And I remember being like, I really want to be her friend more than any other person. I was like, you can't tell me that being gay is a fucking choice when you're 3 years old. And you're like, I'm in love with, as much as a 3-year-old can be.
Mm.
Being like, I really want us to be best friends.
And yeah. not in the same way that you want to be best friends with other people.
It's like an obsession.
Yeah. It's absolutely an obsession. And like, a 3-year-old has no concept of like romantic adult relationships. They don't understand those dynamics. It's not that all they feel, all that I felt was just like, I really feel happy and like energized when I'm around this particular person.
Like the purest affection, like untouched by societal.
Yeah. Like, no pressures, no, preconceived ideas of who I should like. And, like, to me, I think that's one of the reasons I've always been, like, so sure that I'm just a lesbian. And, well, it's weird because I had that knowledge, and then at the age of 11, I remember going to my parents and being like, hey, I'm celibate. And my mum laughed, and my dad was like, okay.
Yeah, Dad's like, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I've had a great reaction. But for me, the reason I had said that was because the idea of being in a romantic relationship with a woman, like, it hadn't occurred to me because it's not like, I grew up on Disney films and there's no lesbian romantic relationships on Disney films. So I'm like, oh, I really want to be Aladdin. I really want to be Simba. I'm really into Nala and Jasmine, but I don't want to be them.
Yeah,
so I'm like, I must just not want to be with in a relationship with guys.
Yeah.
And then I had my first lesbian kiss at the age of 15. I was like, oh no!
That's what it is.
I'm a lesbian! It's so obvious. But for me, I wasn't raised religious, and so it was a very different kind of, like, I still had to struggle with certain elements of being a lesbian, but I feel like it was on a different level. And I want to talk to you guys about having much more impactful religious experiences and like how that resonates with this book and how that's affected you. And that's my open question to the room about that.
I think what I found most interesting, like, so for me, we didn't talk a lot about homosexuality in our town. But I lived in a very similarly small kind of insular Christian town where homosexuality was definitely frowned upon. It just wasn't talked about because there weren't a lot of openly gay people in our town.
Mm.
There was a lot of, like, I went to an evangelical type Pentecostal church for a long time while I was growing up. And there is sort of like this immersion they want you, like, where like everything that you do is for God.
Mm-hmm.
Every part of your life, like if you're in sports, you should be playing sports for God. You know, if you're in school, you should be wanting to get good grades for God.
Not for you. Fuck yourself. Fuck your own goals. It's for Jesus.
But also, like, everything about sex that exists outside of a marriage between a man and a woman is considered a perversion.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one of my pastors saying, like, don't hug your dad straight on because he could have impure thoughts and that's on you as well.
Oh,
like,
my God.
That's so fucked up.
Like, they just, they teach you, and I'm not saying every Christian does this because every Christian doesn't do this. And I think that what my parents and I talked about was very different. And when I told my mom that, my pastor, that, she said that was absurd. Like, because it is. But
also in saying that, most, like, the majority of sexual assault and sexual violence in homes is from family members.
Yeah, but it's not, it has nothing to do with, like, you can have, if you have a healthy relationship with your parent, having normal levels of affection with them is not going to encourage it to become an unhealthy relationship. It isn't sinful. It's ridiculous. It's
a completely different type of love, right?
100%.
Yeah.
But that rhetoric around any type of sexual promiscuity, from, you know, LGBTQA to just having sex outside of marriage, as sinful, as something you have to control, as an urge that you've got but you can beat it. That kind of rhetoric, like, from the, like, they were like, don't just police your actions, police your thoughts.
Yeah, police your mind and your biological.
Pray for forgiveness.
The idea
that masturbation is sinful.
Well, the idea that just, like, a desire is inherently wrong. Like, for me, religion is just, like, the most extreme killjoy. Like, it's like, oh, you are horny, don't sleep with anyone. That's bad. It makes you feel good. Like, it's like, religion is like, the idea of two consenting adults being like, oh, let's have sex. Okay, that's bad. Because you're not married. Like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I don't have a defense for you.
I think it's worth noting that there are Christians who aren't like that. But I do,
100%.
Like, but I think, yeah, like, the idea that, because I always say when I'm talking about Christianity and whether or not, like, homosexuality will send me to hell, it's like, what I was taught is that by my mum, not by every single Christian that I interacted with, but by my mum, that God provides the greatest love, that, like, greater than any love you could imagine. It is the best love. It is the purest love.
Mm-hmm.
It is so unending. And so to me, it's like, well, if it's so unending, then punishment isn't a part of that. Because if I can forgive someone who hurts me or who's doing something hurtful, not saying that being gay is hurtful, it's not. But, like, if I can forgive any sort of thing that is hurtful or, like, that isn't hurtful, like, then, and God is supposed to be a greater love than me, then
only
he can
be benevolent.
Yeah, like, yeah, like,
so much more, like,
then this entire concept of being, like, there's only one right way to be, and if you're not doing it, there's punishment. I just don't think that's accurate. Like,
that seems like a caricature.
Yeah, it does. And it seems very Grecian. Like, if you think about the Greek gods, it seems much closer.
Punisher. Jealous.
Yeah. You're jealous and angry and vengeful. Yeah,
possessive.
And that's
bizarre. You must love me. You must love me and only me. And if you do not, I'm going to kick your ass. For all time.
But, like, I think it's worth focusing on, like, one of the things that I really liked about what Danforth did in the book is creating a foil. There's Lydia, who is kind of crazy and really harmful and, like, in a much more direct, like, she wants to control them kind of way. But then there's Rick, who at many times Cameron is like, yeah, he's a cool guy, because he is. And Rick and I think her aunt
Ruth
and
Grandma
and Grandma, everybody besides Lydia and Coley,
have a genuine
heart. And that's the thing that's so hard with this, because for people who do believe that homosexuality is wrong and who believe in Christianity so deeply, they really believe in their heart of hearts that they're doing the right thing for their kid.
And
that's what's so complicated about religion indoctrination is that it's parents believe. Like, I mean, and you know, I said this to you this morning, and why wouldn't you believe that? If you believe that you would get eternal, everlasting life with your family and the people that you love, why would you not want to bring them into that bubble?
You know?
So it's...
For sure. But it's always about the intent versus impact, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you're exactly
right. But the problem is that even, like, even with Rick, who has really good intentions, and his intentions are very pure, like, he really believes homosexuality can be beaten, it doesn't really matter, because the effect is still negative.
Yeah.
And it's not for Cameron, and that's why Cameron doesn't rage against the system. That's why she's not like Lindsay. Like, the effect isn't wholly... It's not negative in a tangible way the way that it is for Mark and the way that it is for Aaron, who have such severe self-loathing.
Yeah. Well, Cameron has a different kind of sense of humor, which she just loved. Like, even in the film, you see it where, like, she gets called a dyke and she just kind of laughs, because she's just like...
She's so, like, startled. She's like, oh, whoa. It was really, you know... Right, you went right there.
Yeah, that's her sense of humor. Yeah, you know, like, that's why she likes hanging out with the boys so much.
Yeah,
it's a kind of more masculine sense of humor.
Yeah. What, Abby? I want to hear from you. I want to hear thoughts. I want to hear feelings. Whatever you're comfortable to share.
Yeah, yeah. So I, as a teen, bought very heavily into the whole purity culture.
Yeah,
I believed it, and I thought that I was going to be getting married to a guy and saving myself for him. So, like, I was very much invested.
And saving yourself.
Did you have any purity jewelry? Like a ring?
No, see, I don't think purity culture was, like, as hammered as much in New Zealand compared to, like, I've seen documentaries in the US of, like, purity balls.
Oh, the documentaries!
And they're, like, 10 years old and they're, like, signing these things. Mm. It's so gross.
And I think that my experience of Christianity, especially growing up, kind of, I had this, I think, quite uncommon background with Christianity, in that I grew up secular in terms of, like, my family unit. I had, like, Christian auntie and grandma and stuff, and they were quite fanatical.
Sure.
And they were fanatical, okay.
Yeah, I mean, never in an angry way, but, like, happy clappy Christian, like
happy clappy Christian.
Let's pray for Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it.
And baby Jesus cry.
And I mean, I love them. They're great.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
I think as a kid, because I had all these qualms about, like, existence and the meaning of life and stuff.
Yeah, hardcore.
What are we here for? And kind of freaking out about that from quite a young age, and kind of being handed that, like, you know, bow-tied, easy, like, solution of, like, God made us and he loves us and here's the Bible and, like, all these things that sounded really exciting and kind of gave me, like, relief and, like, there's heaven exists and all we have to do is follow the rules. And I feel like, also, I think part of it's, like, an Asperger's thing of, like, oh, like, it's all set up here. If I do all these things and I'm, like, a good girl and I'm, you know, going to be blessed by God or whatever. And I guess even as a side thing, I didn't really have trouble with being celibate or whatever through school, or being, like, not pursuing guys or anything, obviously, because there was nothing there. In hindsight, I'm like, oh, that's why. But, like, I never... I was never boy crazy. Like, next to even, like, my Christian friends were, like, you know, really, like, into gossiping about guys and people they had a crush on, even if they, like, weren't, you know, among them, they were, like, never going to be dating or, you know, at that age. Because, like, that was not a... That was not the Christian thing to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
But yeah, I feel like I went on a wee tangent.
No, there, no, we love the tangent. This podcast is, it should be called All About the Tangents. That's a great title for a podcast.
But yeah, I remember, like, struggling with, I guess, getting really wrapped up in the whole purity culture thing in terms of, like, finding, like, I'd get my friend, my friend offered me this book, which was essentially like I Kissed Dating Goodbye. I'm sure you've heard of that, or maybe not.
I've heard of books similar to
that. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't that one, but it was something about like girls, like how to, a woman, guarding your heart or something, like something really gross. It was like a woman's guide or young woman's guide to blah, blah, blah. And it was basically about like keeping your heart pure and like... masturbation is bad and like all these sorts of things, which is like that was
masturbation is my, like a gift.
Yeah, yeah. That was like my biggest thing as a teenager.
Yeah,
like I already knew implicitly from youth group and from I guess media and all these things that within Christianity, homosexuality is like a bad thing. Like it's not of God, and even though I'd never really had anyone. Like, confront me, you know, about it, being like, this is not okay. Well, for one, I would never go there with anyone, because I hadn't even really come to that conclusion about myself. But also, yeah, like, the biggest thing for me was, like, I had this extreme guilt about, like, masturbation. I was like, this is not okay, this is wrong, like...
Me too. I felt, like, so disgusting and perverted. Yeah. Like, and I felt like I was sure that none of the other girls I went to school with who I admired and wanted to be like were doing it. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like if I could kick that habit, I would be normal. And I just really wanted to be normal. And all of the girls that I went to school with were Christian and popular and pretty and normal. And and I was this perverted masturbating psycho.
Yeah, yeah.
It is literally something that only benefits you and harms no one.
Mm. Yeah.
There is so little wrong. Like, there is... It is a good thing. It is... a great thing, go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, like, I know all that now, and I
100%.
Have zero qualms about it, and I feel like that was something that, as a teenager, the more that I kind of repressed that and put it in the you can't do that zone, like, the more that that became something that I struggled with,
because
it was something that my brain was, like, intensely focused on.
Yes.
I don't know. Like,
yeah, like the scene like you can't, where Aaron... I hate the word, but like the scene where Erin fingers Cameron, the disgust that she feels, like that sadness, that self-loathing, like I can relate to that so much. Like going like, I've done it. I knew I was going to masturbate. I knew that I was craving it. I knew that I would fail. I knew that I would fail because I am a failure.
Yeah, and that cyclic thing.
Yeah, it's and it's just, it's so damaging. But like I firmly believe that most of the people in my life, like the adults, like my mom and dad, never wanted me to feel that way. It's just kind of it's a byproduct of a lot of the theology that you get in like Christian youth groups.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
They're so determined to keep you pure and not pregnant.
When you lock it away in this box, like we're not going, like that's not an okay thing to do until you find the right guy and you court him or whatever. And then, you know, once, like, you've, like, done the ceremony and it's all official, then it's fine. Because what happens then? Like, you don't really know what to do. You don't know if you have, like, that compatibility.
Sexual dissatisfaction is, like, a problem in marriages. Yeah, and if you don't know what you yourself like because you've never touched yourself.
And also never touched another person.
And, like, and how could you even begin to start describing what you want to someone when you've spent your whole life being ashamed of your sexuality?
Exactly. How do you just turn it on and go, oh, I, like now this is, you know, I'm in the good zone. Like I've done,
good
you know,
to
I've,
go.
I've saved myself and I've ticked that all off and now ready to go. Oh, but like those feelings of guilt don't just go away.
100%.
Just because you've now done this.
Yeah.
And
this ceremony.
Yeah.
I met people who were more severely Christian who would be like, sex should only be done when the goal is to produce a child. Like, you can't see it, but I'm like,
I've never
rolling
had
my eyes right
sex
now.
Sex with the goal of having a baby.
What do you mean? Every time we have sex, my goal is to produce the virgin lesbian.
I'm sorry, I keep letting you down.
Jesus.
I need me some semen.
You know?
I don't have any.
I want to, like, virgin birth Jesus as a lesbian. That's my goal all the time.
That would be a delight. I would totally believe you. If you said to me, I haven't slept with someone, but I'm pregnant, I'd be like, wow, you're Jesus. Or Mary or whatever.
Which means that your vagina is magical.
Yeah. Magical vagina.
For
you, okay, because that was like sad trauma stuff. What was like a positive realization about your own sexualities that you both had? Like, what's a positive memory that was like towards the earlier point when you were kind of like, yeah, this is who I am and I love myself and it's okay.
Crickets. No. I think once I had started to come to terms with it at the end of year 13, and then I actually started to have, when I was reading those conversations with people, I made sure, like, I was very meticulous in that I planned to tell people who I knew would be super on board and really supportive,
yeah,
and okay with it, to kind of buffer me and, like,
yeah, sure,
you know, give me that confidence to kind of trust myself that, like, I knew myself enough to be able to kind of make this decision to let people know about me.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of had some worries about telling, like, people from church or people from, like, youth group or, like, different parts of my life that had that kind of the Christian influence. But, yeah, I look back on my coming out experience with very fond memories. Like, it was really cool and really cathartic. And, yeah.
That's great. May I ask, you don't have to answer this. What is your religious status now?
Very much atheist. Yeah, I mean,
we have a friend who's so atheist. I asked him the other day, I was like, you're an atheist, and he's like, I've never even considered religion. It's like, to him it's so illogical that religion, he's like, yeah, I wouldn't even say I'm an atheist. I'd be like, there's no such thing. And I was like,
To be an atheist is to acknowledge the existence of religion. But he's like, I'm
nothing. There's nothing. We live, nothing. We die. That's it. Brianna, do you have?
Oh, I have so many.
Yes, I know.
Positive memory. Like, coming out was really hard for me in a lot of ways. They weren't. I mean, there are people who were in my lives before me coming out that aren't in my life anymore. I think ultimately, though, like, all the important people are there. And
sure.
I mean, I think of so many moments. The first time we had sex.
You and me?
Yeah, like, was huge. It was huge because I was acknowledging a side of myself that I'd always been afraid to acknowledge.
Yeah.
I'm
glad it was positive. Yeah. I was like,
our wedding day was also incredible because you couldn't be in that room and claim that there was anything perverted or impure about it. It was such beautiful happiness.
We didn't know you at Abbey, otherwise you would have been invited. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes.
And I think that's something that I was really disappointed. Like, every part of all the love that Cameron experiences in the book or in the movie, as depicted in the movie, is tainted by other people. But she has so many wonderful, positive experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
With Lindsay and with that...
The other swimming coach,
yeah. And also with Coley before everything gets tainted. Like, it's just really disappointing. Like, when she talks about her first kiss with Coley, she's like, I'm not gonna make it out to be something it's not. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And that's such a beautiful way to remember that moment, in spite of everything that happened. And the book is told from the perspective of kind of like an older Cameron looking back on her life and analyzing it.
Yeah,
so
I
like,
keep waiting.
The fact that
waiting.
She can still look back after all these years of everything she's been through and go like, that moment was still perfect for me. That speaks to so many things. And I think that the juxtaposition from how normal she is in every other aspect, you know, like, she spends all day out in the sun, they drink fizzy drinks, they have candy. They like lift it from the store and they feel like, ooh.
You can really envision it. Like you can see it.
There's such a sense of place in the book. Like it's so clearly set in Montana. Yeah. And like all, like there's such a description about the heat and the weather and like
there's two seasons.
There's
winter.
The people.
And farming season.
They describe Perkins, which is like a diner chain, which Maddie and I have both actually been in when they were describing it. I was like,
In North Dakota. Yeah, for me, for the book, I was really curious because it was written from the perspective of like a Cameron who was okay and older. And I kept waiting for the book to end, like, where is she when the book ends? But it just kind of finishes with her swimming in the lake. I was like, do they get away? Do they make it to her mum's friend, who's the professional tennis player?
Margot.
Yeah, and she's implied to potentially be a lesbian.
Yeah, it seemed like in the conversation.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
They
draw attention to her physicality and her short hair. They kind of...
You know, and like
the masculine dress.
There was almost even a suggestion that maybe Margot had been infatuated with...
With Cameron's mom. I agree with that.
Because they're like, but I don't know, because I did feel like there were certain things in the book that, writing wise, were left like on. Like I described it to somebody, like there seemed like there was foreshadowing to things that never panned out. Like it seemed like there was quite a lot of significance placed in the photo of Margot and her mom. That never went anywhere. Yeah. Other than it was just a keepsake.
And I was kind of like, did they date?
That seemed like there was a story there. And then. Yeah. Even in the scene that we read, where Ruth says, you don't actually know anything about your mom. That's a loaded statement. There's a story there. Why does Ruth feel so confident that her mom might have sent her to a gay conversion therapy camp?
Yeah. Like what happened,
you know,
in the appearance?
Because like she described herself, and this is such a thing. Like this is such a thing as like a Christmas and Easter Christian. That's how she describes their family. They go like a few weeks up to Christmas because they feel a bit guilty about not going the rest of the year. And then like 2 weeks after Christmas, they're like, fuck it. And they go back at Easter. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And like for many years, we were Christmas and Easter Christians.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we missed some story there. I felt like, what was the whole sex dream with
The teacher.
Bethany.
That was weird. I had a very different experience, but I think like it's interesting because
what happened to Irene? Do they ever catch up with Margo?
Yeah, there's a lot of I'm surprised.
How is Mark?
This was written 8 years ago, and I'm surprised there isn't a second novel.
Where is Coley? Because I imagine two versions of Coley. Yeah,
I would enjoy reading it.
Mm. No, I mostly imagine one version of Coley, which is where she marries some boy in the town, settles down, and has kids, and hates her life. And hates her husband and always wonders about
what could have been.
Yeah. And then my other version of her is that she settles down and she outwardly loves her life, but she becomes like evangelically anti-gay.
And sort of fear of that part of her that she kind of unlocked a little bit in her youth.
And I always imagine one of our children being like openly super gay. Mm. Like Lindsay level gay.
Yeah.
And yeah, and what happens with Lindsay? Like there's so many things. Yeah.
So many things.
I have so many questions. Emily, please write us.
Yeah. I kind of related to Cameron quite a lot. Yeah, you did. Because of the tomboyish nature of the character and also about... Not in the sense of how she was, kind of in denial about her lesbian tendencies, but kind of how, like, it was a side note to her personality. Mm. Like, when I was 16, I had my first real girlfriend, and, like, that's when I felt the most comfortable to tell my parents that I was like, oh, we're dating, because there seemed like a point, whereas before that didn't seem like there was a point to tell them, because I wasn't dating someone else, so I was like, if you're single, does it matter? Of course it does.
If you're single, are you still a lesbian?
That's the whole debate.
If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it. If you're a lesbian spinster. If you're a lesbian
Are you still a lesbian? Oh, that's so funny. Of course you are. But yeah, and I, for me, like it was anticlimactic. Like because the way that I phrased it, like I didn't say, hey, mum and dad, I'm totes a rainbow warrior. They were like, it was like, hey... I don't know if I should say her name. We say names on this podcast all the time. I don't know. Should we filter those?
Okay, anyway. We're going to call her Mary.
We're going to call her Mary. So I was like, hey, Mom.
Mary and I are going steady. She has my pin.
So, like, I'm a bit embarrassed at this first relationship, really, but it's fine. Like, embarrassed at my behavior is what I'm talking about. I was 16. Abby's like, move on, keep the story going. And so I said to mom and dad, like, we're together. And they're like, yeah, we're not fucking stupid. They didn't sleep, but they're like, we're not stupid. Like, she's sleeping over here every other weekend.
Like, they cottoned on. Yeah.
Of course they did. They're not oblivious. And, like, we weren't religious growing up. Like, we would go to Christmas to sing carols and stuff at Christmas, but it was mainly to see the church all done up and, like, it was pretty and stuff.
Mm.
But I was still worried about them being disappointed in me because I think there isn't enough representation in media. Like, we've watched She-Ra and Steven Universe and is Gravity Falls, does it have any gay characters? I remember us loving it so much. Why did we love Gravity Falls so much?
Because it was great.
It's just a really good time. But I think representation is really important because especially as a kid growing up watching cartoons, I was like, all these couples are heterosexual. Where am I? How do I fit into this? I don't know. And I definitely in my like later 20s and now is when I'm actually like, oh, this is who I am. This is kind of who I want to be. And you're still unlearning lots of stuff. But religion is a sham. Reading the book. Film by itself, out of 10, as a film in and of itself.
Mm.
I say like 7.
Yeah.
I like
it. Yeah, 7.5.
I go 6.5.
Ooh, why?
One of the reviews I read said that there is an energy to the scene, like, and I would say this is true of the scene at the end, where Cameron is up on the table singing, that the rest of the movie lacks. And I think that's kind of true. Like, it's not that it's static. You almost get too much of Cameron's, like, responses where they're, like, they've just said something really, really horrible or really, really, like, important, like, from their perspective, important to her. And she just says, okay.
Yeah. It happens very often. Like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, like, she's just like, okay, great. Or, like, how are you? They ask her how she's, like, 20 times in the film. And every time she's like, I'm fine.
I'm okay.
I'm good. It's fine.
I don't think we can really, like, compare, because I know we already did that rating, but, like, comparing the book to the film, like, it would take us too long to list all the differences, because there's so many.
No, it's so many.
There's so many. So it's like,
the first two-thirds of the book.
They're different things. So, like, if you like the film, definitely read the book.
You'll like the book even more.
Yeah, you'll like the book more. What do you rate? Did you already say?
Yeah, about 7.5. I don't know how much of it comes down to just I am biased, like,
that it exists.
Towards the fact that it is a thing, and
yeah,
I think way that the characters are portrayed, for the most part, the ones that do make into the film, are
yes,
like
it's like half
accurate
of them.
To what I would have expected. Like,
yeah, sure.
And I think visually, like it's really well done and. The main thing that I didn't like about it is the fact that it doesn't cover the whole timeline. But if we're just talking about the movie,
yeah,
like as it stands, then yeah, I think it was really well executed.
Okay, one of the things that I really didn't like is the point where Cameron is like, maybe this is my one chance to fix things, because she never goes through that in the book. Like, that's never a thing. She's just blandly indifferent to the fact that she's there. She doesn't want to be there because she doesn't like the sense of control. She's there. But, like, it's not traumatic to her the way that it is to the people who really believe in God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she sees herself. She has a really solid sense of herself. A part of herself happens to be a lesbian. But she has, I think, humor is one of the, such a strong quality to have when you go through trauma. Or are being oppressed in some way. Because if you can laugh about the obscene, just the absurdity of things, you're more likely to survive and retain your sanity.
Mm, like a protective thing.
Well, because her struggle is never with God. Like, at no point is she like, I'm concerned this is bad because God.
Mm.
Her only struggle with lesbianism comes from, I'm concerned my parents would have disapproved of this.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's she'll never know because her parents are dead.
Yeah.
So for her, it's about forgiving, like you said, like it's in the lake scene, it's about her forgiving herself for having that sense of relief that her parents would never know.
Yeah.
She'd never have to deal with that disappointment. It's not about God. No. And so for that place, like there's a quote from Saved, which is another really great film.
It's got Mandy Moore in it.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
What do you think? Isn't it hilarious?
Yeah, it's really good.
It's so good.
Free made me watch it, and she was telling me the premise. I was like, I don't want to watch that. She's like, no, you'll really, you do. And then I was like, this is hilarious.
Yeah. But it's like,
it's got Macaulay Culkin in it.
The quote.
Sorry, dear.
The quote.
She just hit me. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
No, she's like, it's fine.
The quote is like, Mercy House doesn't really exist for the people who get sent there. It exists for the people who do the sending.
Yes. It exists for the people who send you away.
And for people who don't really believe in the dribble that's coming out of those places, it doesn't exist. It's just like a military camp. It's like military school. It's just like an annoying place to have to go as a teenager.
Yeah, but then once you're an adult,
if you believe in the rhetoric, then it's problematic and it's very traumatic, especially if you're trying so hard and failing at every point because you can't change who you are. You can't do it.
It's kind of made me wonder whether there are camps like that exist or have existed in New Zealand.
There are currently.
Yeah, there are.
Oh, no, they may have, but like actually, that's not correct. Most conversion therapy, which is why people don't think of it as being associated with New Zealand, comes from private practices. So like your parents will find a psychologist who believes in the practice and will send you to that psychologist.
Yeah.
In the same way that you would get regular psychology or therapy sessions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is
easier to hide.
Easier to hide, exactly. Exactly.
Yay.
But like 1.4% of the votes in the election went to New Conservative Party, and 1.4% of the votes is still a stupid number of people who agree that gay marriage should be abolished in New Zealand.
Yeah, but there's always going to be stupid people, and there's always more stupid people than you think that there are.
Well, we need to weed them out.
How?
Murder.
This is normally the things that I say.
Yeah,
of the things that I say.
We need to weed them out through education from young people.
That's right.
Public education.
Critical thinking.
Is so important. Yes, and like
being able to analyze information.
Like we talked about, I didn't read any gay LGBTQA literature growing up, but I want my students to read LGBTQA. They need to read it, and they need to read it in that context because it legitimizes it in a way that if you just pick it up off the shelf at a bookstore, it doesn't.
Yep.
Like, this is a school, a government, public institution telling you that being gay is okay. And that's a big thing.
Well, that's why we talked about, oh my God, what's it called? It's about a star.
It's about a star?
No, it's about Star, who plays basketball.
The Hate U Give.
That's why The Hate U Give being taught in schools
about a star
is also so important. No, because it's like it's the school acknowledging that systematic racism and oppression exists, and we need to we need to actively combat it.
Yeah,
we need to actively combat ignorance and misinformation.
100%.
Yes. Okay. Great. We're over an hour because the content is so good. What are some final thoughts anyone wants to share before we do our final segment? Or are you good? Anything feel like you have to say that you haven't said? It's okay if there's nothing.
I would just like to say that one of the changes they made that I'm A-okay with is the fact that Jane Fonda is a POC. Like, so good. You can always add people of color where they don't exist. They don't have to be written not white. So, props to that. Also, something we didn't cover is, like, the particular abuse that Adam faces from the institution is intersectional because he's not just getting it on the fact, like, it's not just because it's not just because they're not straight, not gay. They're actually polyamorous, I'm pretty sure. Although I don't think they use that terminology in the book, but their particular oppression is intersectional because they're not just being oppressed because of their sexual identity. They're being oppressed because of the customs and practices of Native Americans, which is a whole extra level of fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, the scene where they cut their hair is just, like, gross. It's gross.
Yeah. You happy that's in the film?
I'm happy that that particular intersectionalism is shown in the film, yes.
Sure. I honestly don't think I've seen a movie with a Native American character in it. Like, I can't think of one besides this.
Besides Pocahontas? Have you seen Pocahontas?
What about Indian in the Cupboard?
Huh?
What about Indian in the Cupboard?
I don't know what that is.
It's really racist. Don't watch it. But as a 90s kid, when I was like 7, I liked it.
Okay.
It's a magic cupboard, and You like lock the Indian in and open it and it comes to life and it's a real adult man.
Do you know what would be great? Oh, I don't know if they could do this.
It's not creepy, it's fun.
And yeah. I don't know if it would be problematic, but like, I really loved the character of Pocahontas. The story of Pocahontas is racist. And I really, you know, it's like, I really loved The Greatest Showman, but that, what, like, why was it about P.T. Barnum? I could have bet about any circus in anything. It didn't have to be about P.T. Barnum. P.T. Barnum, bad guy.
Yeah, bad guy. Bad guy, P.T. Barnum. Okay.
Like, could they redo Pocahontas and just lift the music and place it on a different character? Because the music is great. Do you know what I mean?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I haven't seen Pocahontas.
But I love
No, I've seen Pocahontas. I thought you were talking about The Greatest Showman.
Oh, no. But like, could...
So you're talking about both. Right, but I thought you were asking...
Yeah. Like, could they lift Just Around the River Bend and like put it in a different movie?
Cool.
You know?
Okay. Great. We're tangenting.
It's all good content.
Final segment for chapter one, take two, revamp, remake, retire.
Yes, so revamp is like, it was good, but we'd like to see with updated CGI, updated effects, new actors. Remake is like, back to the drawing board, this sucked. And retire is, it should have never been a film, or they've already done it so good, we don't need to do it again.
I've got mine,
and we're going to say it on the
count. Do you have to pick out of those?
Yeah, pick those three.
Those are your three options.
Oh, but like... Remake can mean, like, if you want it made again into a miniseries or, like, whatever.
No, remakes means it can be remade anyway, just a better adaptation of the book.
Yeah, so revamp is, like, just update the film
what
version
currently stands.
We just saw. Yeah. And remake is, like, remake the book, however...
The movie.
Remake the movie however you want it to be on based on the book. Or retire is, like, don't make it again.
Okay.
So you got one now?
Yep.
Great. We'll do it on three, okay?
One, two, three.
Remake! Yeah.
Woo!
Consent. Yeah, I want a miniseries. I said that before. I want a miniseries, and I
think
want
it's
to
worth
see...
having a miniseries.
I also want the author to continue the narrative.
Yeah, continue the narrative. 100%. What?
Emily Danforth, please answer my questions. I have so many
Emily
questions.
What's the M stand for? My name is Maddie. Does it stand for Maddie? I bet it stands for like Matilda or Mary or Margaret.
Marie.
It's a common one.
Marie.
Marie, that's a common one. Anyway.
Good. I bet it stands for marshmallow.
Thank you so much for coming on this episode of the podcast, Abby.
Thank you for having me.
Have you enjoyed it?
Yes.
I'm glad.
It's so good.
Did you have anything you want to plug? Do you want to talk about anything you create content-wise that you want to tell our listeners to check out?
I mean, I have a blog.
You do
have a
blog! Mentioned on it!
Yeah, you guys have. I haven't been vlogging.
You've been busy.
For a while. Yeah, just, I don't know, writer's block.
It happens.
Stuff.
It happens. You were doing it really frequently for a while.
Yeah, lockdown was an inspirational time,
You should check out Lena Norms. Super jealous. Abby and Bree are going to be doing their masters together next year.
We're
going to
start the lesbian revolution in the school system in New Zealand.
Yeah, they're going to shake things up. And I'll be like at my job being like... I want to go to school again.
But the blog is bohemianhumanist.com.
bohemianhumanist.com. It's really great. You should definitely check it out. Some fantastic articles. You have a Facebook page as well as a website?
Yes, that is correct.
She also has a YouTube channel.
Yes, you always have a YouTube channel.
The YouTube is unaffiliated.
That's not the same thing. Cool.
An archive we don't need to go
to. Awesome. Cool. You good?
Yeah.
You good?
I mean, I'm hungry.
Great.
Yeah, well, we're going to eat. So this has been...
We're going to have some lesbian vegan pizza.
Yep, it's lesbian because it's made
by all the lesbians on this channel right now are vegan because we all got our V-cards.
Yeah, God, we're all such, like, just like, hey, here we are. We're the next generation. You're all doing it wrong. This is how you do it.
This is how you do lesbianism.
This is how you do it. Chapter one, take two. Is a fortnightly podcast where we read a book and then watch the film and then discuss how well or not so well it was adapted.
And we also talk about social and political issues.
Yeah, 100%. This podcast does not exist just talking about the content. The tangents we go on are delightful. Join us. Join us in those experiences. We have a YouTube channel which is affiliated, so you can check that out. Maddie, also perform stand-up regularly. Brie and I are putting on our first show. If you live in Christchurch, New Zealand, and listen to this podcast, hello, neighbor, on the 5th of December, Brianna and I will be putting on a show. If you head to our Facebook page under Chapter 1, Take 2, I'm sure I'll be talking about that. Also, we have Instagram. Also, we have Twitter, which we don't really use that much. We just tell you when we've released
an episode. I tweeted the other day.
Oh, good. Well, if you want to see how regularly we post updates, you can follow us. And then you'll see, like, because it's not like an annoying thing. We're like, oh, they've released another episode. Okay, this is how I follow them. Great. Cool. That's all I have to say. Chapter 1, Take 2. Or at outlook.com as well, if you want to email us. Because Bree wants to talk to you.
Bree wants to talk to you.
Bree loves talking to people who have read
opinions, yep, and ideas, yep, and thoughts, and just any little thing that flows through your brain.
Specifically, Bree wants to talk to people who have read the same books that she's read.
But also, if you have another book suggestion, I'll take that too.
Yep, but you have to be a guest on the podcast to have a suggestion. That's not true at all.
No, I love books.
Yeah, cool. But I'm looking forward to our first solo show. Were you going to come?
Yes. Right. I'm going to be there.
Just like put her on
it's gonna
the spot
be, it's going to be, I know. I'm like.
No, but I was going to
say
that.
It's called, it's called Hers and Hers Tells.
Hers and Hers Tells. We're putting the show on with Little Andromeda, so you can follow their program for the summer season, which is over December in New Zealand, because we're on the summer. We're in the southern hemisphere. That was my lips forgetting how to move.
We're in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah, so for us, Christmas time.
Everything is backwards.
Beach
here.
Time. Bree's like,
I don't understand the seasons.
I'm from Alaska.
Christmas is strange.
The snow is winter and Christmas.
They're holding me hostage.
I hate being so. Anyway, we're being ridiculous now. Thank you so much. Next week, we will be covering the delightful book by Amy Tan, called The Joy Luck Club. And that will be great. It's incredibly well written. I'm loving it. Bree's just finished it. She was crying this morning and she finished it. And I was like, you're right? And she's like, yes, it's just very good. So
nice.
That will be a good
That's high praise.
That's high praise. She was crying. And I was like, okay, great. Thank you so much. Take care of yourselves. Good luck with the US election if you live in the States.
Get out and vote.
Yeah, get out and vote. Voting in your democracy is incredibly important. Take care. Bye-bye.
Vote.
Say goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're leaving.
Vote.
Oh, no.